This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It is 12:03, March 11th, 2024. Good afternoon, and thanks so much for joining us for the Monday edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Rachel Pearson, and I'm filling in for Rob Hart today. Surveys indicate nearly half of parents are providing financial support to their adult children. We'll discuss that in our next segment. Right now, though, the latest chapter in the Bears Stadium saga involves reports the team's setting its sights not on Arlington Heights, but along Chicago's Lake Front. We're joined by Bob Reed, business writer and contributor of Chicago Magazine. And Bob, does this announcement of a domed stadium near Soldier Field change the team's trajectory and this narrative we've been hearing for what feels like forever?
It sure does look like a major turn. You know, the Bears came out roaring today. They're talking about investing $2 billion in private money into what they're calling a publicly owned stadium and park space. That's a very interesting turn of events. You know, as you said, it's a dome stadium. Now, there are those that say dome stadiums cost more than $2 billion to build these days. So where's that extra money going to come from? But the bigger questions have to do with building along the lakeshore and if they're going to be allowed to do it. Right now, it looks like the mayor is really intrigued by this plan. He's been talking with the Bears, but there's a long way to go before this thing's going to see reality.
Yeah, and that includes sort of what do we do with this property that was purchased just a year ago? I mean, this is a big property, the Arlington Heights racetrack there.
Yeah, well, the Bears are going to have a decision there. They paid $197 million for it last year. It's 326 acres. It's a huge site. Mm-hmm. You know, the Bears really aren't in the real estate business, and one of the things they were thinking of doing there was building the stadium on their own, but then developing the rest of that land in terms of restaurants, entertainment complexes, office complexes, and things like that. I would say that those plans are definitely up in the air. The plan for the lakefront seems to be pretty serious, though, so I don't think they're just leveraging this time to try to get a better deal from Arlington Heights and the county regarding taxes.
In fact, perhaps even the opposite, that this was just a long-term plan to get leverage with the city, ultimately. We know that the team is meeting with Mayor Brandon Johnson's administration as far as next steps, but what are some of the hurdles that are going to be coming up here in the near future if this plan moves forward?
Well, they're significant. I mean, first and foremost is building on the lakefront. What do you do there? You know, the Friends of the Park have fought this kind of thing before and have been successful. It's unlikely that they're going to be lured by talk that the Bears intend to add green space to this project. In addition to that, you know, the governor is not very enthusiastic about putting money into privately owned stadiums and helping out billionaire sports owners. So we'll have to see where he falls on this one and whether he thinks it weighs in the public's favor. And then, you know, you're just going to have community groups, too. Keep in mind, this is on the lakefront. It's still somewhat inaccessible. That could cause some problems in terms of mass transit and such. All these things have to be dealt with as the project goes on.
But Bob, if I went down onto the street here on Michigan Avenue and just asked a random stranger what they think of the Bears staying in Chicago, my guess is it'd be a sound of support.
Well, and the Bears would agree with you because they did do a survey and they said, well, you know, something like 80% of them were in favor of it and 60% liked the idea of public money being spent. That is something that you have to take with a grain of salt, because if I take you over to Evanston, Northwestern did sort of the same thing when it unleashed a market survey saying everybody was in favor of knocking down Ryan Field and rebuilding it. But they faced a long, hard fight from the community, which didn't buy those numbers. So the same thing could happen here. It depends on the details and how much is being asked for and what's going to be done with the money.
Thanks so much, Bob Reed, business writer and contributor of Chicago Magazine. Coming up, how adult children are putting a strain on their parents' finances.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A recent report finds almost half of parents with a child over the age of 18 are providing some level of financial support. So let's talk about the line between helping them and hurting yourself with Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner and founder of Engage Wealth Group here in Chicago. Ed, I'm in a unique position here because I can relate to both sides. I am a millennial. I'm also a new parent, and I can tell you this is something that I'm definitely top of mind for me. But let's just talk about, first of all, for millennials and Gen Z, it's hard out here.
Absolutely, Rachel. And I think that is the big difference. If we look at it from a society standpoint, way back in the day, you know, you turn 18, you're out of the house and off you go, and you just kind of either thrived or you didn't thrive. Today, it's very, very different. And to your point, you know, it is challenging today. You know, the costs, expenses, inflation, jobs, it is very different today. But the important part is to understand what you're trying to accomplish, especially from a parent standpoint. And that's where having these conversations are incredibly important, and then setting parameters around those.
Right. And what does that look like? How do you set boundaries? I know every parent wants to support their child and wants them to succeed. But at the same time, you have to sort of look out for your own financial future, too.
Exactly. You don't want to be helping people to your own detriment. So oftentimes we ask clients when they want to support their kids, you know, is this like kind of a financial lifeline, or are you really trying to just support their lifestyle? So I often equate it to like, is this a financial trampoline, or are you providing them a financial hammock, right? Did you lose a job, get a divorce, something happened unexpectedly where they need that help and you want to be there, or are you just supporting their lifestyle? And approaching it from that standpoint and having that understanding is really key to making sure of what you're trying to accomplish.
You mentioned, too, sort of setting up boundaries, parameters. If you have a client that's trying to set those up, what advice or what examples do you have for them?
Well, the biggest thing is kind of looking at your own plan, right? We want to re-review the plan. Something happens, you want to support your children. What does that mean? And is that sacrificing your own lifestyle for what you're doing for the support of children? And again, kind of going through those parameters, ultimately, you don't want to give so much away that you're finding yourself turning to your kids 20 years into the future and then having them support you. So having that understanding between you and your kids is very important on the gate. And if things need to change, and that's the hard part, Rachel, the hard part is when the tough love conversation comes in, the fact like, you know what, I can't do this anymore. And that's where challenges come in. And that's where challenging conversations ensue.
This is the analogy I think of when you go on a flight and you watch those safety videos and they tell you to put the mask on you before you help your kid. This is sort of the same thing financially, right?
Yeah, brilliant. And that's the whole point is that, again, you want to make sure you're okay. We want to do well on behalf of our kids and our grandkids, and we want to do things. But again, keeping that in your mind in terms of, well, what does that mean not only today, but in the future? And again, if you're willing to pare back on your own travel and your own things to extend that to your kids and grandkids, that is great. But you really need to be aware of just giving away so much can be a detriment. And typically, it's not a detriment today. It's well into the future. And again, setting up those parameters, those conversations, and having those direct and oftentimes difficult conversations can go a long way in keeping peace and financial harmony within the family.
We always appreciate the advice. Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. The website, engagewealthgroup.com. Up next, Boeing facing even more scrutiny following another overseas incident involving one of its jets.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, dozens of passengers have been injured by what's being called a strong movement today. It happened on a Boeing-made plane flying from Australia to New Zealand. So let's talk about that latest incident involving one of the company's jets and what it means for the terms of outside oversight. Ken Goldstein is president of KJG International Consulting here in Chicago. And Ken, this is just sort of the latest issue for Boeing. And really, the company is under a magnifying glass because we just know it's been issue after issue. And that creates a hyper focus now. And let's talk about what we saw today.
Well, what happened today was a LATAM, that's a Chilean airliner, flying between Sydney and Auckland, New Zealand. He was two-thirds into the flight. It was at altitude. And the reports that come back saying there were people, it lost altitude, people hit the ceiling, there was blood all over the place, and it also indicated that there were a lot of people who didn't have their seatbelts on. My preliminary reading of what I've seen is that it was probably mid-air turbulence. It had probably nothing to do with the airplane.
Right.
The airplane itself was fine. Unfortunately, you touched on it immediately, which is right now all Boeing aircraft are in the spotlight because of what's going on, particularly last week with United Airlines. So in this particular case, thank God there were no fatalities, and it more than likely was mid-air turbulence. And the best thing I could say, if you are flying, keep your seatbelt on.
Right, right. And yes, today's may have been weather-related and outside the scope of the Boeing aircraft itself, but we know United Airlines had three incidents involving its Boeing jets last week. We know that the FAA rigorously assessing Boeing. So I'm curious, you know, what is the Aviation Administration going to look for, and what can it do after all these mishaps?
Well, first off, United last week was a bad week for them and their aircraft. They actually had four. Three of them were Boeing aircraft, one in Houston where it turned off the runway and got stuck in the dirt. That was a 737. Another one was a 777 taking off for Tokyo out of San Francisco. A tire fell off and hit probably in the employee parking lot and damaged the car. That went to Los Angeles. They changed planes. There was another one where, and it was early in the week, this was a flight taking off, and on takeoff, the engine ingested bubble wrap and it caused the fire, so that came back. And then the last one, which is an Airbus, that was a hydraulic issue, and they landed with safety concerns. But so there was the four, three of them were Boeing. What is the government doing? Well, the government, as a result of the incident in January with the Alaskan Airlines, where the bolts they found were not there on the door, which had been there and blew out, they have given Boeing a safety order. They've told Boeing, you got 90 days to come up with a better safety program, in so many words. And just recently, the Justice Department is opening a criminal probe of that. So Boeing is under the gun, if you will, extreme microscope here to get things done. And Boeing's chairman, David Calhoun, has said, hey, this is on us, and we've got to do it. They were looking at their safety concerns in Renton, Washington, where the 737s are made. They're looking at their supply chain with Spirit. They're looking about buying back Spirit so they can put a better safety control over that. Spirit is the people who make the fuselage and body parts for the 737 at many assemblies in Texas and Wichita, Kansas, and other places, and ship them for final assembly into Renton, Washington. So there's a lot going on, and Boeing has got to change their culture. They have got to focus more on the fact that they make a quality aircraft, and they've got to make sure that it is more than quality efficient.
Thanks so much, Ken Goldstein, president of KJG International Consulting here in Chicago. Still ahead, a look at the impact of the Oscars.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rachel Pearson in for Rob Hart, and these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The Bears reportedly looking away from Arlington Heights as the site for their new stadium. Israel's prime minister, the target of criticism from President Biden over civilian casualties in Gaza. This year's Academy Awards have been handed out. We'll review the results and talk about the Oscar boost at the box office. And it's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get a couple of suggestions from a portfolio pro. WBBM Business, the Dow up 19 points, NASDAQ down 29, the S&P 500 down 5 points. AccuWeather says temperatures will top out around 65 degrees this afternoon before settling in the mid-40s overnight. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues as plans for a new Bears stadium are now centered on a publicly owned domed facility on the museum campus along Chicago's lakefront. That's according to reports from the Sun-Times and our sister station 670 The Score. Under the proposal, the team would invest more than $2 billion, that's billion with a B, $2 billion of private money into the project. It also said to include plazas, landscape sections, and paths that would increase open space throughout the area. President Biden, meantime, has been pushing for a six-week ceasefire in Gaza during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. However, Hamas has balked at a prisoner exchange and accounting for captives. In an interview with MSNBC, the president has taken Israel's leader to task for civilian casualties. More now from CBS's Skylar Henry.
He's hurting Israel more than helping Israel. It's contrary to what Israel stands for. And I think it's a big mistake.
President Biden not mincing his words, criticizing Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and calling for Israel's war with Hamas to come to a ceasefire. As humanitarian support by plane and by sea heads to the region, the World Food Program is warning that a quarter of the population in Gaza is one step away from famine.
Netanyahu says he intends to push ahead with an invasion of the city of Rafah.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, the stocks are mixed, so joining us with the latest on what exactly is moving Wall Street is Matt Shapiro, president of MWS Capital here in Chicago. And Matt, a lot of red early this morning, the Dow just now entering positive territory. What do you make of what you're seeing today?
Well, it's kind of a day where the dogs and the defensive stocks, the stuff that hasn't been working so far this year, are rising, and some of the stocks that have been the super stocks and the super winners are down. So definitely a mixed picture. Remember, the market has come a long way. Volatility is rising a little bit, you know, signaling that, you know, potentially a pullback could happen. Would definitely be understandable given how well we've done so far this year. Tomorrow, of course, a key inflation report. Remember, inflation continues to fall. Stocks will be supported and continue to rise. So that is, of course, still a very positive factor.
Yeah, we know that the consumer price index coming out tomorrow, and that's obviously the data that the Fed looks to when we're talking about whether or not it's going to put an ease on those rate hikes. Is it enough, do you think, or are we going to wait for another few months before we really start to see those interest rates come down?
Well, I'm of the opinion, Rachel, that actually the Fed's going to cut rates less than people believe this year. Maybe only a couple different times. First of all, we have to have good numbers. They have been good. That has to continue. And they need two or three meetings to actually put the sort of language and positioning together. So each meeting, they'll like make a slight shift to sort of signal the markets. Remember the 60 Minutes interview? Scott Pelley said, the chairman said they would cut rates in June. I do believe that will be the time, but we'll see how much follow-on you really get. Then you come into the election, so there's a lot of uncertainty there.
Now, you mentioned that today specifically, we're sort of seeing some of the smaller stocks play catch-up, but when we're looking at those big ones, those stocks are dancing around all-time highs. So what could potentially douse that party?
Well, it's kind of a problem issue. I mean, the success of the super companies, 30% of the S&P 500 are these amazing companies that we have in the good old United States, you know, NVIDIA, Microsoft, Google. They're all doing great, but a lot of concentration. You know, everybody knows the story of NVIDIA spiking up so high, but also, you know, had a $130 range in the past couple of days. You know, that's a signal that maybe there's a little bit too much in it. And realize when you're just, you know, buying your, you know, 401k, putting money in, 30% of your contribution are going into these companies, which are great, but, you know, they have PE ratios that are, you know, Microsoft is now a 30. So we're kind of trying to pick our spots. Obviously, we do own those. We did use some time to trim some of them back, but it is also hard to buy other things that aren't working. So, for instance, utilities still haven't really participated. So we've tried those, but in this day and age, you know, something like Wisconsin Energy, which serves our local area, seems kind of boring.
Now, are there certain areas of the market that you see as cheap right now or a good time to snag up as they're starting to catch up?
Well, the aforementioned utilities, just regular companies that pay a dividend, such as International Paper. But you got to be patient, you know, and you got to be willing to sort of lose the topic at the cocktail party, right? Oh, well, I'm in this or that boring stock, right? So it's not easy to do. And of course, investing takes a lot of patience. One stock we really like is insurer Chubb. Has a really, you know, attractive PE ratio of 12. Earnings are rising. It's one of the largest insurance companies of the world. So, you know, financials and stocks, you know, large bank stocks, insurers like Chubb have PE ratios that are seemingly in line, but again, those are going to be slower, more defensive stocks.
But we're also seeing those traders who don't like boring, who don't have patience, and are throwing money at, say, Bitcoin and crypto, making a bit of a comeback. So my question to you, is that going to last, or do you think we'll see a correction there as well?
Well, also gold, which is rising as well. So, you know, think of Bitcoin as digital gold, sort of information. Remember, money is information, which was, of course, you know, for thousands of years. Then we have gold. Now we have a Bitcoin. You can't really know where it's going to land, Bitcoin. Obviously, it's something that's valuable. So it's used for a lot of transactions. But, of course, a lot of speculative energy goes into it. And one would think money should not be that volatile. So, again, you know, the risk takers are definitely, you know, in control of the market. But, you know, look at volatility rising a little bit. There is a risk for a congestion pattern, a little bit of a pullback, especially in a few months as we head into the very unpredictable general election.
Thanks so much for joining us, Matt Shapiro. He's the president of MWS Capital in Chicago. Up next, what the Academy Awards mean to the movie box office.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Oppenheimer, the big winner, including the Oscar for Best Picture at the 96th Academy Awards last night. And now movie companies are looking to capitalize in the aftermath of the big night. So let's talk about it with Paul DeGarabedian, senior media analyst for the box office tracking company Comscore, based in L.A. And Paul, I was maybe surprised to see a naked John Cena, but I wasn't surprised to see Oppenheimer sweep the awards last night. Let's talk about, I mean, what does this mean for movie companies moving forward?
Well, it's really important not only for the studios, but for movie theaters as well, because all of these movies are they came out of that big screen presentation. I mean, movies have to play in a theater to be nominated for Oscar, and that's for a good reason. And especially with a film like Oppenheimer, which is so much bigger than life, and the presentation, the sound, the cinematography, which it won for, as well as you know, best director, of course, Christopher Nolan, and for best picture, among others. Just a great night for Hollywood, really good for movie theaters. And it really, it's like a 3-hour infomercial for the movies. And I mean that in the best possible way. And it was a really global, you know, seemingly the global aspect of cinema was really brought to the forefront with films like The Zone of Interest and Godzilla Minus One. And certainly it just pointed out how the international language is cinema. And it was really, it played out quite well last night.
And I think sort of in the, well, I'll call it the pandemic and post-pandemic era, we saw movie studios go to just digital releases, right? Or streaming releases exclusively. But you sort of alluded to it. This is a resurgence of the silver screen.
It really is, Rachel. And I think that's a big part of it. And I think studios now, you know, look, obviously during the pandemic, they had no choice but to, you know, when theaters shut down in mid-March of 2020, it was like, well, what are you going to do? You're going to have to go to the small screen. But now, as we've seen over the past couple of weeks with Dune Part 2, and certainly that's a movie, Denis Villeneuve, that director ranks with Christopher Nolan as a very visual director, meaning on the big screen, that's his canvas. And I think it just shows how much people love going to the movies, the communal immersive experience. And for the box office, I mean, these Best Picture nominees, the 10 of them, they had earned $1.1 billion in global box office. However, though, 85% of that was from Barbenheimer.
Well, and that was my question, this what we saw last night and sort of the repercussions from it, how much of it is based on just the movies itself, right? And you talk about Barbenheimer and sort of the cultural phenomena that went along with it. I doubt that we'll see another two dueling movies like that in the near future, at least.
Yeah, that's a rare one, and that was organic, and that's why it works so well. I mean, for a few weeks there, they had Furiosa and Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes both going on Memorial Weekend.
It's not the same.
Year, but it was not meant to be, and those movies were so alike. I think a dystopian worldview of both those films, that may not have worked, but it certainly worked for Barbenheimer. But there are always surprises that come along. Last year, if we were sitting here talking, We wouldn't have known that Sound of Freedom was going to do as well as it did, or Five Nights at Freddy's. So it's very unpredictable. We're only into March. There's a long way to go for the box office, and we still have a lot of big movies and the summer movie season on tap.
Thanks so much for joining us, Paul DeGarabedian. He's a senior media analyst for the box office tracking company Comscore in L.A. You can join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. Plus, still to come, it's our Stock Picker Monday.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday. We welcome Matt Mategan, CEO of Blue World Asset Managers in Chicago. Matt, glad to have you with us. What's your first pick?
Well, first, today is a couple of ETFs, and the ETFs, as listeners know, we consider those, if our portfolio was a shopping mall, we consider the ETFs to be the anchor department stores. They allow us to invest in a basket of stocks rather than trying to pick a single winner out of a particular industry. So the U.S. markets have been dominated by aggressive growth recently, while Japan has been sort of quietly making a significant economic comeback, and consequently, their value companies are starting to get noticed. So we think this particular ETF is a real gem, as it provides a decent expense ratio, good diversification with some offshore exposure. It does pay a small yield, and it's long-term minded value basket. The symbol is EWJV, and it's the iShares Japan Value ETF. It's fairly new, going back to about 2020, and if you look at the volume chart, it is getting some attention. Just as an example, some of the holdings are familiar names like Toyota and Mitsubishi, as well as some that may not be as noticeable or recognizable, like Kao and Sumitomo Pharmaceuticals.
Now, that's the Japanese value ETF. There's another ETF that you had mentioned.
The other one to talk about today that we're really excited about is FOXQ, S-O-X-Q. As the marquee AI names head for interstellar space, there's a lot of FOMO out there regarding the AI boom. There is a great ETF by Invesco that tracks the Philadelphia Stock Exchange Semiconductor Index, and it trades under, again, the symbol is SOXQ. Now, we hear the term semiconductor a lot, but we don't necessarily stop and think about what they are. Suffice to say that they are vital components in the development of AI, and arguably even more valuable in that application than they have been to the advancement of cell phones and computers. So as AI evolves, semiconductor volume and quality is going to expand. And this ETF is a great way to participate because it's still very affordable at under $40 a share. It also gives us a piece of the big dogs like NVIDIA and AMD, as well as some seasoned but perhaps lesser known players like Wolfspeed and Axcelis Technologies. So this one also pays a small yield. It's a reasonable expense ratio, and we are really, really excited about this one.
Thanks so much, Matt Mategan, CEO of Blue World Asset Managers. A reminder that you'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and on the Odyssey app.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.